Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Kevin. This is the Jayhawk Talk Podcast. Andrew's not here today. He's down there in New Zealand on his freaking honeymoon. So we're going to talk all kinds of shit on him for not being here. We had to get a podcast out. And I got good news. It's not just going to be me. We got a special guest joining us in just a minute. I wanted to get this podcast out there this week because you know what? The Big 12 starts this week. Starts Friday. You might be listening to this on Friday. Happy Big 12 Day because it starts today, if it's Friday. Lots of games coming up this week and some incredible games, actually. And this is going to be a trend. Every freaking week, there are going to be incredible games in the Big 12. Just an insane amount of awesome games. It's going to be must-see TV every single night, which is going to be awesome. There haven't been any games since we last spoke because we've had a little Christmas break. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to everyone out there. Hope you had a great one. KU got a great one because they got themselves a little Christmas gift under the tree in the form of Silvio D'Souza joining the squad. He's not cleared yet by the NCAA clearinghouse, but he is cleared to practice. Does not sound like he's going to play in the Texas game, but at least from what Self said, he wouldn't be ready to anyway. So we got a situation where he'll be able to dive in over Christmas break here, really hopefully learn a lot of about certain plays and able to at least get on the floor enough to bring some energy and rebounds and maybe play some cleanup duty. Unfortunately, probably won't know the playbook at least for another month, and even then, obviously, it's going to be pretty elementary version of that. But that's okay because we need reinforcements. Hopefully, we get Billy too. We'll see what happens there. But I'll give you a quick rundown of what we got going today. We're going to talk about the Big 12. Tons of Big 12 talk. And we are going to be joined by friend of the Jayhawk Talk podcast and voice of the Kansas Jayhawks, Mr. Brian Haney, joining us in just a moment to go through the Big 12. We've had him on to do this several years in a row, and that will not change now that he is, in fact, the voice of the Jayhawks. Really happy to have Brian on. Again, big fan of Brian and certainly a regular contributor to the Jayhawk Talk podcast. Glad to have him on. So we're going to jump into that. We're going to talk about the schedule. We're going to talk about who we expect to be standouts in the Big 12, what we expect from the Big 12 race, and most importantly, will KU continue the streak? And you heard a lot of people talking out there about how this is the year. This is the one. You keep hearing it. You hear a lot of people saying, I would take the field against Kansas. Honestly, if you put a gun to my head, that might be a tough bet. The field versus Kansas. But honestly, I'm probably still taking Kansas. And we'll talk about why. So let's pause. Let's get Brian in here. And we will continue with some Big 12 talk after the break.
Bitch, I'm Frank Mason. If you ballin' in the eight, then you Frank Mason. Yeah. Bitch, I'm Frank Mason. Bitch, I got three hoes and they all tens, triple double. They ain't wanna see me.
All right, we are back and we are joined by friend of the Jayhawk Talk podcast and, of course, voice of the Kansas Jayhawks, Mr. Brian Haney. Brian, how you doing today?
Doing great, Kevin. Happy New Year to you and yours. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Thank you. And Andrew's not here today. It's just you and I. So we're going to talk all kinds of crap on Andrew. That's just how it works because he's not here. But thank you for filling in for with my little co-host duties here and for joining us. I think this is might be the fourth year we've had you on. Does that sound right?
I think so, yeah. We did several when I was down in Lubbock with the Red Raiders, and it's been a couple since I've come back. So, yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm privileged. That's like the Saturday Night Live host that gets invited back five or six times, you know?
Listen.
That makes me Christopher Walken or what? Peyton Manning, maybe?
Maybe Peyton, maybe MJ. We're going to get you a watch. Like, I think you get a watch for being the fourth time on or fifth time on. The watch is on it's in the mail, Brian. You watch for that. all right. Well, so, hey, we want to talk Big 12 today. And, you know, we have a couple storylines here in the Big 12. most notably that it's really good. I mean, I think the Big 12 is awesome. It is the top conference in the country, not close, at least top to bottom. KenPom, the numbers just absolutely blow every other conference away. What has been your impression of this Big 12, conference, at least through this non-con slate?
Well, I think if we would have talked in October, I would have told you I thought the league would be really good, but that you had one elite level team in Kansas, and then teams 2 through 8 were all B plus caliber teams, and you didn't have a second true blue blood elite level program, but you had a lot of really good teams that on any given night could look great, but they were probably more B plus at best. I think if anything has been proven these last 2 months, it's that, you know, 2 through 8. And by saying through 8, I'm including Texas and Oklahoma State, who aren't ranked but are very close to being ranked in the top 5 or 6 receiving votes, that don't currently have a number next to their name. You know, 2 through 8, you've got some A-minus teams in there now. Now, they still don't necessarily have another elite-level team. Maybe West Virginia is the closest thing to that. We'll see if that is backed up the next 2.5 months. But to me, you've got a bunch of teams that on any given night could beat you regardless of home versus away. And the question will become, will there be a ton of self-cannibalization where they just all eat up on each other and beat up on each other, and you got some 10-8s and 11-7s for the final record of these teams? Or do a couple of teams emerge and find a way to win those tough road games, find a way to go 8-1 at home and 6-3 on the road and be 14-4. Bill Self said yesterday he thought 13-5 could win the league this year because it's just that deep. And he said there'll be plenty of weeks where really good teams go 0-2 on the week because, man, they took on 2 ranked teams, and that's life in the Big 12. It's a tough league, man. You know, this first opponent of Kansas, I would list this game off as one of your top 3 or 4 most difficult games of the next 18. And I say that because, man, they had Duke on the ropes. If they win that game and they're a 2-loss team right now, they're ranked where Kansas is ranked. They're yep. somewhere between 10 and 12. And their other loss was, you know, a couple of nights later to a top 20 Gonzaga team, also in overtime like the Duke game. And their third loss was to Michigan when they were figuring out life after Andrew Jones, who Bill Self expects to be back for tomorrow night's game. So to me, you know, it's a Texas team that is every bit as good as some of those clubs that right now are ranked in the top 20 in the Big 12 conference. And I'm glad we're catching them earlier in the slate as opposed to later. But having said that, to start out on the road with Austin, Fort Worth, and Morgantown in these first 2.5 weeks, that's a really tough gauntlet to run through. And if you promised me right now we could have 2 of those 3 games as wins, I'd head straight across the street to the local Lawrence Bank and put it in a safety deposit box and take that deal in a New York minute. Because the road to 14 straight is going to require some tough road wins, and Kansas has 3 of their tougher ones before they'll really truly be whole as a team. So if you could get 2 of those 3, I think you'd have to feel mighty good, Jayhawk fans.
Well, before we get into the each team, and I totally agree with your take, by the way, these first few road games will I mean, honestly, it's kind of crazy to say, but could help decide the league race. I mean, these games that you go out on the road early on and you win, maybe when teams are still figuring themselves out, totally agree with you there. Kansas has had a way of doing that over the past, you know, 13 years. So let's talk about the streak for a second. We had our pals CJ Moore on and Jason King to talk about their book with the streak, and been reading through that thing and sort of remembering all these different years. And now I'm thinking about it. It's like, so you hear people say, is this team different? You're kind of starting to hear a little murmur out there that for some reason people are thinking this KU team, the way it's constructed, you know, Self's early comments about how soft it is, blah, blah, blah. Does this feel like a different team than maybe those 13 before? Or is that just the Christmas break syndrome that people just around this time of year have to sort of throw out some talking points on?
Well, I think that they're more hamstrung, you know, in the front court than they've been. You think back to the 2012 team that went to New Orleans, and, you know, clearly you had a depth issue on that team, but you also had some guys that were really athletic and really good in Robinson and Withy and Kevin Young coming off the bench. And there's a similar depth issue that team to this team, but, man, you had some bona fide studs at certain spots. And for Kansas this year, you know, you look at this roster compared to, say, 08, when Cole Aldrich was your fourth big man. I mean, right now, Cole Aldrich, he would eat every night on this team, man. He would, as a freshman, you know, be right there in the mix, playing ahead of Lightfoot, playing ahead of Doak in some circumstances, playing alongside him in a lot of circumstances. And that was your fourth best big. So usually, 2012 not included, usually you got a much deeper option of bigs. And I think Bill Self said it best about 3 weeks ago when he said, most years, if we're having an issue with a guy getting the job done on the floor, the best motivator to correct those wrongs is playing time. And I could just look down the bench and say, hey, Brandon Green, get in there. Hey, Elijah Johnson. Hey, Andrew Wiggins. Hey, whoever, get in there, take him out. And in this year's case, that happens. You look down the bench and you realize you don't have anything there to bring in terms of reserves. And so you just say, hey, try harder. You're staying in the game. You're playing through it. And that's not been the case ever in the Bill Self era that I can think of, you know, with maybe the exception of that relatively short benched 2012 team. But to me, you know, this Kansas club, you're obviously going to get Silvio real soon. Coach Self told me on Wednesday, not likely for the Texas game as they deal with the amateurism issues with him. And that's not, I shouldn't say issues, but that's what you go through anytime a guy reclassifies, and sure, everything's going to work out there, but it's a process that has to unfold. And to think that it would get done by Friday night at 8 is probably a little bit of a pipe dream. So you got to get him for sure. Hopefully you get Billy. If so, you go from outhouse to penthouse in terms of big man depth. Problem is they're all really green. Because, I mean, hey, Udoka's still just a kid. And he's at this point, if you add last season to this season, he's played two-thirds of one full year. All right? So it's not like he's got a ton of skins on the wall in terms of, you know, fighting through, grinding out close Big 12 games and hitting clutch free throws with 10 seconds to go. He's looked really good dunking the ball and shooting 78% and all that, but he's still a guy that's pretty wet behind the ears and not very long in the tooth. Mitch Lightfoot, I think, is the silver lining to come out of this Billy Preston situation, because he is so much more ready to help you now. It's so much more confident to come in and not have any deer in the headlights type, you know, feeling that he may have had as a freshman a year ago. And the free throw numbers are a great indication of how much more comfortable he is out there now, night and day different from the 2-for-12 that we saw a year ago. But if you take those two guys and you add to them Silvio and Billy, and I'm not guaranteeing that we will, but you're certainly hopeful that we add both, suddenly, geez, you got, you know, four top 100 guys, you got four top 70 guys, quite frankly, you got 3 5-star guys, you got four guys that were either 4 or 5 stars. And the only problem with the whole lump sum of them is their probably average age is 18 years old,
right?
And you're going to have to grow them up fast. And Bill Self has said it's going to take 3 or 4 weeks for Silvio to get acclimated. It'll probably take something similar, maybe a little less than that, for Billy, who's been practicing throughout, but, you know, not practicing with the ones. And I think it's been challenging for Billy. He's done a great job of staying engaged for the most part, but, you know, for all these kids, you come to places like Kansas to play and win and make headlines and all that. And it's hard to bust your tail and practice every day and never get the fruits of those labors in terms of the game night glory. And that's been difficult for him. And so it's going to take a little bit of time for him to fully reengage and get to where he was at, you know, entering the season when we saw him look pretty good versus Mizzou and Kansas City. But if you add all those guys and you know, you can kind of mix it up on some nights where you get your 15 deep catches for Doak and you get, you know, an 18 and 12 type line out of him, but the other guys are coming in and offering some block shots and some extra fouls and some good rebounds, and they're pushing Doak to be more of a beast on the boards than what we've seen. I think that's good for him. I think there's a lot of things that improve dramatically and make us look at this Kansas team vastly differently, as opposed to a club that, again, Bill Self summed it up best: we don't have anybody else to put in, so just try harder. When has that ever been the case at Kansas? So I think that's no longer going to be the case as soon as Silvio gets cleared, and it could really be a distant memory if you get both Silvio and Billy, because suddenly you've got one of the more talented, albeit very, very green, front courts you'll find. And from there, it's just how good can you grow them up in the next 10 weeks before Big 12 tournament time and Selection Sunday and all that. And Bill Self has a tremendous track record in getting his bigs to develop quickly and overachieve, but this will be his greatest challenge yet if he has not one but two that are breaking in January. It may not help you early on in the Big 12 schedule in your pursuit of 14 straight, but man, they could look vastly different and much more difficult come NCAA tournament time if you give Coach Self and his staff 2.5 months to work with raw talent that special.
So, yeah, I think a couple things to unpack there. Number one is you say that Texas, you know, us catching them at this time is good. I think there's a lot of teams out there that are probably thinking the same thing about catching Kansas early. You know, we've got this team, like you said, could look vastly different in a month or in 6 weeks. And so I think you're exactly right. And to that point, I think right now it is important that we can go on the road and catch a win maybe we're not supposed to, or you know, keep winning games at home and just sort of survive the gauntlet until those reinforcements really get in there, hopefully, and then really be able to contribute in a few weeks or down the line. I think it could be a very different team. And that's a good thing. You know, the question is, though, or it's a good thing for maybe the NCAA tournament run or hopes to, you know, be a Final Four team. But is it enough early on to continue that streak? And that's why I think these early games are just going to be so important. And let's walk through the schedule just a little bit. But I guess one more point. When you hear people say the team is different, I agree with everything you said. I think it is different from a depth perspective. But we still have, I would call this still a Bill Self team. It doesn't look like it right now. But I think by the time we get there, this will be a Bill Self team, a grind out, be able to score late, get that bucket late, get that stop late. Those teams that somehow win those close games, and that is Bill Self's forte in this Big 12 race. And the way that we've won this thing so many times is because we win more close games than everybody else does. And we have this other thing called Allen Fieldhouse, which is an amazing, amazing advantage to have over everybody else. And frankly, one nice thing is we don't have to play Kansas. That's one nice thing that we can say in this Big 12 race. If you think about it, I mean, that's huge. Yeah, we don't have to play Kansas. So
no, I agree. And you know, the whole mentality of, is this one of the more soft teams Bill Self's ever had? And he's made the comment that it is. I would ask you this, and keep in mind, I was in Lubbock for 4 years and didn't get to go to every press conference from 2012 to 2016, but I covered him for the first 8 years or so before that. He's made that comment more than two or three times. Sure. About, oh, this is one of the softest teams I've ever had. And he usually makes it in November, December. And usually by the time February rolls around, you got some bad A, you know what, that aren't going to let you take their ball, that are going to get 70% of the 50-50 balls, that are going to throw an elbow in your belly when it comes time to box out and get a rebound, and are going to knock your tail to the floor and stand over you. Not in a taunting way, but in a, we are the baddest dudes on the block. This is our league. This is our trophy. Get out of the way kind of mentality. I'm not saying this team is going to be the toughest team Bill Self's ever had. They may not be in the top seven or eight of his toughest teams, but to say that they will finish the year as the softest team, I love how he says soft, by the way, they won't, okay? They aren't right now. And they just went at it twice on Wednesday, practicing hard, getting after it. This is where teams grow up.
Yep.
The time between the first semester and the second, when all you have to focus on is ball. And you can't tell me a team that has this much veteran talent and this much veteran leadership on it is going to sit there and listen to their coach call them the softest team he's ever had and not do a damn thing about it.
Right.
They're going to get up off the mat. They're going to come out swinging. They're going to add some guys in terms of depth. But I think there is some toughness there that will emerge. No, they don't have the dogs like Bill Self said that they had in Frank Mason, Landon Lucas, and Josh Jackson. You don't have guys that naturally have that dog mentality, but you can't tell me Devontae Graham is going to go quietly into the night and be pushed around and allow the guys around him to do the same. You want to see more dog develop in guys like Malik. You want to see more dog develop at all five positions, quite frankly. But if there's any master motivator in America that can push those buttons and bring the dog out and bring that toughness out, it's Bill Self. That's been his number one staple, his number one calling card. The reason why he was a first ballot Hall of Famer at the age of 54, it's going to happen with this team. Maybe not to an elite toughness level, but to certainly a sufficient toughness level that gets you to winning 14 games in Big 12 conference play and gets you to winning a 14 straight Big 12 title.
I agree with you. Well, let's jump into the schedule. I know we just have a few minutes here, so let's try to hit these kind of quick hitter, you know, just maybe a minute or two per team. That first one, obviously, being Texas, is Friday. And Texas is Ken Pom, number 31, maybe the second best defense per Ken Pom at the moment. Seventh lowest in points allowed, around 60. Not a great 3-point shooting team, but you know, they're a solid team, as you mentioned. You know, took two very good teams down to the ropes. Probably should have beat Duke. They were up quite a bit late. And then, man, they've got some guys. Mo Bamba with his 8-foot wingspan or whatever is basically unfair. Going to be a blast to watch him and Doak with totally different styles go at it. Give me your impression. I know you've probably been doing a little quick scout of Texas. What do you think of this game?
Well, I'm really intrigued to see what happens with their sophomore McDonald's All-American guard, Andrew Jones, who's a game-time decision. He was averaging 15 a game before a wrist fracture that's cost him his last four. Coach Self told me on Wednesday he fully expects him to play, and they're preparing as if he will, and that's a major difference maker if he's back in the mix. And if he comes back and he's not quite 100% yet, well, that was fortunate for Kansas in terms of timing. But to catch him at any type of rust factor because of the 3 or 4 week absence, I think you have to feel good about that. But you also have to be leery that you know, they've not played in a week, and he's got a chance to come out guns ablaze, and he could be a real spark emotionally and quite literally on the floor. And then Bamba, like you said, I mean, I don't know where you're recording this podcast, but if you've got a Diet Coke can sitting 10 feet away, he could just lean a little bit and grab it. I mean, that's how long those go-go gadget arms reach on him. You know, they listed it 7'9", but I've read what you've read, that it's probably closer to 8 feet on the wingspan. That's unbelievable. Yeah. And he blocks 4.3 shots per game. He's such a talent. And you know, he probably alters 10 shots a game that he doesn't block.
Right.
So we saw Kansas struggle against the Kentucky link when they had six guys with 7 feet or longer on the wingspan. It'd be interesting to see what they can get around the basket, because he changes more shots than he even touches. That's quite a force you've got on that back line.
Yeah, I agree. I think it'll be a good game. I think KenPom has it as maybe even a 2-point differential, or maybe even less, maybe 1 point. I can't remember, but it's close either way. So that is going to be a lot of fun on Friday. I won't put you on the spot to pick the game, but I kind of like Kansas coming out of here. I think the difference will be 3-point shooting. I think we'll be able to get some looks there. Hopefully, Doak can stay in the game. Obviously, that's a huge key with Bamba in there. I fear the day that we have Clay Young guarding Mo Bamba if it comes to it. So please, don't get in foul trouble. All right, well, let's move on to that Texas Tech game, the next one up at Allen Fieldhouse. KenPom's got Tech all the way up at number 11. Great defense, you know, top six defense. 2-point percentage defense is great, and fourth in steal percentage, allowing only 58 points a game. Chris Beard has them going. You know, they beat they killed a Northwestern team that's pretty good, beat a good Nevada team. Their only loss is to a very good Seton Hall team. I know you were down there a little bit, so you know these guys. Now they've all kind of growing up. Keenan Evans is a stud, good balance. What do you think of these guys?
Well, this is the team that I thought Tubby Smith would stay to coach. You know, this is the group of seniors that I thought, you know, would keep Coach Smith in Lubbock, although obviously nicer facilities and easier city to recruit to, and Memphis came calling. But what we've seen with this senior-laden team that has four guys that would have been, you know, 3-4-year starters, we've seen an influx of additions and younger talent like Jarrett Culver and Zaire Smith add to the mix, who are both averaging in double figures behind Keenan Evans at nearly 17 a game. And Zach Smith hasn't had the type of season many forecast for him, but he's still one of the top two or three athletes in the entire conference and one of the best in America, quite frankly. So, you know, when you've got seniors like that and Justin Gray that you aren't even leaning on as your primary point producers, it just shows you the depth and breadth of what Chris Beard has to work with. And he's done a really good job of adding some supplemental talent to what was already a really long in the tooth, really experienced team. So I'm excited to see what they'll turn into. There's some great kids on that team that I respect a ton as individuals, because I had a chance to know them when they were nobody and nobody heard of them. And Keenan Evans is one of those guys. You know, he's the kid of a former women's basketball standout and Olympic track star. So it should be no surprise that he can fly up and down the floor and he can get high above the rim. And, you know, he's a guy that could be an all conference type player. So that's going to be a tough one for Kansas, and especially when they go to Lubbock. Quite frankly, you know, that's one of my top five toughest games of the year for Kansas, when they go down there to United Supermarkets Arena. And hopefully you get the home game before that, because that won't be any pushover either.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's move on to TCU. This game will be played on the road, 24th in KenPom. Excellent effective field goal percentage. They're up in the top five there. Good offensive rebounding team, also top five. They are undefeated at the moment. They've got decent wins against the Bonnies. They beat Nevada. You know, they're good at sharing the ball. They got Jalen Fisher averaging 6 or 7 assists per game, something like that. And then, you know, Williams and Brodzianski leading the charge. Jamie Dixon's got a squad, man. This is kind of crazy to watch and, you know, frankly, a team that could compete for the Big 12.
They could, and I think they'll compete for the Big 12 most years. I think this was a sleeping giant of a program, and maybe giant's too strong, but it was a bear in hibernation that had just gotten a $180 million stadium upgrade in terms of all the bells and whistles they added to that place. They were already getting good recruits under Trent Johnson from a hotbed of recruiting talent there in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. All they needed was a steady hand steering the ship, and when you bring in a future Hall of Fame coach like Jamie Dixon, it's my expectation they will compete to be in the top 5 of the league every year that he's there and be a top 25 caliber team every year that he's there. They've got the facilities, the geography, everything going for them. They don't necessarily have a lot of tradition to sell, but he's creating that tradition as we speak. And the thing is, you know, a lot of guys on this roster are guys that Trent Johnson initially recruited, and then you've seen some Jamie Dixon add-ins as well. But the point is, it was not an empty cupboard that he inherited. He's done a lot to make it a full cupboard now and a real contending team for sure. But to me, I think Brodzianski is a stud. I love watching him score on the low block. And yet, I think Kansas, if they do grow in that toughness department that we talked about, they can still bully around some of the front court players on this TCU team if they have a larger bevy of bigs to get after them with. And I would think that come, you know, TCU trip, we got Silvio at that point, but what version of Silvio do we have in terms of a guy that's maybe playing his second collegiate game? So we'll see. But I like what they have in the post, but I think Kansas can hang, and I think the Kansas guards with their veteran experience will beat TCU in most settings. Although I recognize we've lost down there in recent years, we've lost in Kansas City to them. So on any given night, you absolutely have to respect the Frogs.
Absolutely. So Iowa State then comes to Allen Fieldhouse. This is the one kind of interesting thing, at least in KenPom. They're 74th in KenPom. And so, you know, as you probably know, when you look at KenPom, they predict every game, you know, in the Big 12 slate or basically every game on the schedule. And I was looking at Iowa State. They have one predicted win on a game-by-game scenario. So if you're just looking at game-by-game, only one game at home against OSU in the Big 12. So if you're just taking it game by game now, as on a cumulative, it's different. But game by game, they're only predicted to win one game in the Big 12, which is wild if you think about Hilton Coliseum. Ain't going to happen, right? I mean, they're going to win some games there, and they'll probably find somebody on the road. They've won 9 straight, including a decent win over Boise State. They beat Northern Iowa, who's pretty good. And I don't know if you've had a chance to see Lindell Wigginton play, freshman, but he's awesome. He's really, really cool. Good. He's going to be a lot of fun to watch. He's averaging over 15. He's shooting like 50% from three. He could be a special player in the Big 12.
No doubt. I haven't seen a ton of him on film yet, but I know he's at least a one-time weekly award winner, and I've been watching the box scores, and you're right, behind Donovan Jackson, he's been their best scoring threat. And with Jackson, I think we saw this coming. He had some huge shots versus Kansas a year ago and was that spark plug they bring in and immediately inject some excitement and energy into the lineup. Now he's looked upon as the go-to scorer and the real catalyst for the entire team, and I think he's made that transition very effectively. Nick Babb's a guy you have to respect the outside shot of as well, and he's also passing out over 7 assists a game. So they've got more talent than I think folks give him credit for. At the same time, you know, that's a team that I have in my bottom 2 or 3 right now because the rest of the league is either ranked or receiving votes, so you have to put them there.
Yeah.
But as Bill Self's quick to point out, and you just referenced it yourself, they've won 9 in a row. You can't sleep on any team that's got that type of role going, regardless of who the 9 wins came against.
Yep, I agree. So then we got K-State, KenPom 43. They're stealing the ball. They're top 20 in steal percentage, slowing teams down as they do. 351st in basketball in defensive average possession and length. So their tempo is in the 300s too. They like to slow it down. They got Barry Brown and Stokes, both averaging around 14. Dean Wade is still a stud, kind of a steady hand, 13-6. They had a good win against Vanderbilt, but otherwise really haven't beaten anybody. But as you know, they took Arizona State to the wire, who obviously came into Allen Fieldhouse and got a win. And then they have one bad loss to Tulsa that they kind of caught them maybe on a bad night. But any thoughts on this K-State squad?
Yeah, I think anytime you've got a group that has a trio of third-year starters that have had that many games together, that many starts, that many nights of playing more than 30 minutes, you have to respect this bunch. You know, Snead's now a sophomore. He's their fourth leading scorer. But that Brown, Stokes, Wade trio is one that I think you got to respect. And again, they're a team that's in the bottom two in the conference and not going to be ranked anytime soon, you wouldn't think. But at the same time, when you've got that type of veteran experience, they'll be always tough on their home floor, and they'll be able to win, you know, three or four games away from home they weren't supposed to get. And so it's definitely a team that I have respect, and you don't want to say fear, but there's a little bit of trepidation there that if you even pause for a hiccup against them, you know, they've got just enough veteran experience and just enough firepower, regardless of the stats you gave on tempo, that they can beat you. Having said that, I expect this to be a 2-0 stretch for Kansas this year. I expect them to win over there in Manhattan and protect the home court, but it's not going to be anything easy, and it certainly wasn't a year ago when Kansas had a much higher ranked team and needed Svi to take four steps and cover 50 feet in a big gallop to beat them at the horn. So it's a good team. And again, when these are your weak links, Iowa State and Kansas State, because everybody else is either ranked or amongst the top five or six receiving votes, except for the last two we've talked about, when those are truly the weak links, holy smokes, what a league. I mean, there are no layups in this conference at all.
Well, speaking of no layups, the next game you go down to Morgantown and face a West Virginia squad that's playing hard again. They're up at number 12 in KenPom. As always, they're in the top three in steal percentage and turnover percentage. But they are allowing teams to shoot a fairly high percentage when they aren't being turned over, which is kind of their forte. Still a good offensive rebounding team and taking care of the ball. And man, they still got that fellow Javon Carter over there averaging 18 points and 6 rebounds and 6 assists and almost 4 steals. I mean, talk about a guy that could fill out a box score. And they've only got one loss. Is that first game in the season at A&M. It looked like they were going to crush them. They were up like 8 or 9 in the first half, and then they just got blown out in the second half. Kind of a wild game. But since then, they beat obviously a very good Virginia team. They beat Mizzou, but otherwise they haven't played anyone of late. So I'm interested to kind of see what happens with this squad.
Yeah, I think when you've got veteran guard talent like that and Hall of Fame head coach, it's clearly one of the top contenders, if not the number one threat to the throne for Kansas, especially when you consider their recent stretch of consistency versus the Jayhawks. I won't say dominance versus the Jayhawks, but consistency versus the Jayhawks in Morgantown with 4 straight wins over there. That's been as tough an out as any for Kansas going away from home. To me, you know, Coach Huggins has a lot of the typical Bob Huggins big man that isn't flashy necessarily, but they're tough and they get to loose balls and they clean the glass. And whether it's West or Bolden or Kanate, there's nothing special, like off the charts, like head turning about these guys, although West is averaging about 12-6. But man, they get the job done. And I think the guard play is a given. Javon Carter could be player of the year in this league, but what do they get from those guys at the other spots? And collectively, you know, is this the same team that will heat you up, break you down, wear you out that they've been in previous years? I think they're a really good team. I'm not ready to call them elite. I know they're the highest ranked team in the conference right now, up to number 7, and for good reason. But it's not yet to where I'm willing to admit that this is like a couple of years ago when you had Buddy Hield at Oklahoma and two teams that truly were elite level in the Big 12. I think you now have Kansas and you have 7 other teams that on any given night could be an A-caliber team, but on a lot of nights will be A-minus, B-plus. This is the closest thing to an A every night if we're giving out grades, but let's see what they do over the 18 games in front of them.
Yeah, I like that. I like the guy Kanate, the sophomore. I think he's from Mali. He brings some physicality in there. He's only averaging like 22 minutes, but I guess that's pretty normal for that team. But he seems like he just blocks everything, rebounds everything. He's kind of a cleanup guy. I kind of like him. Let's talk about Baylor. This is kind of an intriguing team. 28th in KenPom, pretty balanced. They like to slow it down. I think they're 330th in KenPom in pace. 2 losses to good teams in Xavier and Wichita State. They did beat Wisconsin and Creighton, a couple good wins. But I don't know what to think of this team, Brian. They always seem to have a solid non-con slate. I think I was looking it up. They've only lost 6 games in the non-con over the past 5 years total. And they always play good schedules. I mean, they played Kentucky. They had some good teams on that list. But the question is whether they can get it done in the Big 12. And last year they had a good year at 12-6. I think they tied for second in the Big 12. But that's the best really they've done in the Big 12. What do you think of this team?
Well, I think Friday night's going to be a great indicator because they open against Texas Tech in Lubbock. And yeah, this is a great example of the self-cannibalization that I talked about earlier. Those are two teams ranked very similar in the national polls, upper teens, low 20s, in the house of the team that's ranked just a little bit lower. And can they win there? A place that at times Scott Drew struggled to get wins. And, you know, obviously when you got Manu LeConte, you got a senior steady hand at the wheel. And Luol Chwil is a guy that is a very dynamic athlete and a rim protector for you and can do a lot. But after that, they've got a lot of athletes that I'm curious to see how they emerge. I know they got 5 guys averaging in double figures, but can they do that in a league? Probably not. I mean, some of those numbers are going to come back down to life in the Big 12 Conference. But how some of those guys that were just supplemental role players on previous Baylor teams when you had more star power, how they become regular catalysts will tell the tale on whether or not this is, you know, an upper 5 in the conference team or a middle of the pack Big 12 conference team. Because clearly, I like their top 2 players in LeConte and Luol Chwil, but beyond that, I think you've got a lot of guys that need to prove they can do it over a full slate of 30 games and over a full 18-game slate of Big 12 conference games, because we've seen it in little doses and sparks. Now they have to be the man. And I'm talking about Mastin and McClure and Omot and guys like that. How will they do in the rigors of Big 12 conference play? That, to me, will tell us if Baylor is a pretender or a legit contender within the Big 12.
I completely agree with you. Those top 2 are studs. It seems like you need a third guy. And I don't know who that's going to be or if there's going to be a third guy, but I completely agree with you. LeComte's a stud. He's averaging almost 19 points a game. Luol Chwil is somewhere like 15 and 10. He's averaging double-digit rebounds, rim protector. He's so much fun to watch, dynamic player. And I agree. I think they need one more guy. So here's one that everybody seems to be talking about. And this is when we go down to Norman, we play Oklahoma. Kind of came out of nowhere a little bit. I think people thought that they were going to be a good Big 12 team, but not maybe what they've become, at least through this first slate of games. They're 16th in KenPom, just 1 loss to a good Arkansas team. But they got great wins against Wichita State. They beat Oregon. They beat USC. They beat Northwestern, all potential tournament teams. High tempo. This is a totally different team than some of the ones we've talked about so far. I think they're somewhere around 95 points per game, leading all the NCAA. Excellent offensive numbers across the board. And obviously, a lot of that has to do with that freshman phenom, Trey Young, averaging almost 29 points a game, over 10 assists per game. Just a crazy guy to watch play. Something that we haven't seen in a while in college basketball. And what I'm interested to see here, and I'm interested in your take, is how he plays in the Big 12 slate against guys like Javon Carter, against guys like Devontae Graham, who went down there and shut down Buddy Hield. I'd be interested to see how he can handle those bigger guards that can really bother him a little bit on the defensive end. And maybe it's just me, but I expect those numbers to come down a little bit. What do you think?
Well, they have to when you're going for 29 a game, right? Surely they come down. And I agree with you. I think there will be clearly a ratcheted up degree of difficulty for him in terms of one-on-one matchups. And yet his explosive first step, I watch some of these Kansas coaches watching film sometimes, and they're not in awe, but they are certainly in deep respect and admiration and wish they had that on this roster for sure. Yeah. Personally, I thought he'd be a really good college player that would be around for a couple of years. And, you know, if he picked Kansas, he might go for 10 a game and be a nice supplemental piece here in his first year. I didn't see 29 a game coming. I didn't see winning Big 12 weekly honors at a similar clip to Kevin Durant coming. I mean, this is crazy what he's doing right now. And Mannix addition has been huge. This was one of my big leap forward type teams back in October. I told everybody, hey, man, they're going to climb five places, I bet, in the league standings, if not six. But I thought it would be because you're adding in a nice piece in Trae Young to the likes of Kadeem Latin and McGusty and McNeese that I really thought were ready to take that next step in their sophomore and junior seasons. And the sum of the parts would make this team special. Well, Kevin, you fast forward to the end of league play, and it's been back-to-back weeks where Young and Manic have been the player of the week and the newcomer of the week in the conference from the same team. And I didn't know that Brady Manic was going to be that good, and certainly nobody saw 29 a game coming from Trae Young. Anybody that did is kidding themselves, or they went to Norman High School or whatever, because, hey, this guy was good. He was top 20, but he's posting collegiate numbers that you just don't see every year from a true freshman and once in a decade type stuff. And so, yes, it has to come down, but it's been one of the best stories in college basketball to this point. And I think right now, if you had a chance to split with these guys, you wouldn't necessarily feel great about it, but you probably take it. As good as they've looked and the way they went in and handled Wichita State in Wichita shows that they're going to be able to win home or away, regardless of foe, on a lot of nights. I think they're probably the second toughest team, actually third toughest behind West Virginia and TCU, depending on how teams adjust with more film and more time to prepare for Trae Young. Sometimes you're so explosive, it doesn't matter. But I think there's good enough coaches in this league that eventually he'll be not held in check, but brought down a little bit. And will that small retreat in terms of his productivity be enough for this Oklahoma team to be just fourth or fifth best? I think that's going to be what's interesting to see. Or does he just keep ascending and they have a truly special player in a very special year that finds a way to jump into this league race and possibly earn a share of it?
Well, it's definitely the team that's in the spotlight from the national scale just because of Trae Young. And certainly one that has one of the most intriguing storylines. So I will obviously be watching this one very closely. They got a couple tests early. Excited to see them early in the Big 12 slate and see what happens. I think it's just one that I'm still trying to figure out a little bit. Speaking of trying to figure out a little bit, let's talk about Oklahoma State. Kind of an interesting team. They're 49th in KenPom. They've got a solid defense. They did lose to A&M and Wichita State, but you can kind of forgive those two losses. They did beat Florida State on a neutral recently, and otherwise they haven't really played anyone. So I'm just trying to kind of figure this team out. I know Jeffrey Carroll is back. He missed a few games. He's a stud, averaging over 15 points a game. Otherwise, they're a pretty balanced team. I like Mitchell Solomon, kind of brings the physical side to the game, improved every year. But, you know, Mike Boynton's kind of a question mark, and this team's kind of a question mark. I'm just not quite sure what to think of them.
Yeah, hard to say, and yet when you beat a team like Florida State in their house, who I think previously was 9-0, Coach Self called that one of the top three or four non-conference wins for the entire league, and that clearly has his attention and respect. And you know, Carroll was a guy a year ago when he had more offensive weapons around him and wasn't the number one guy for opponent defenses to take away. I thought, you know, wow, what a great Robin to somebody else's Batman. Now he has to be the guy, and he's a marked man. He's still going for 15 a night, but they've been tougher to come by, and he'll be even more marked in Big 12 conference play. Who steps up alongside him, whether it's Smith or Tavares Shine or somebody else? It's obviously not going to be Mitchell Solomon on a regular basis. He's more of a, you know, clean the glass, get some garbage buckets. I know he had a big line versus Kansas a year ago, but typically he's an 8-6 type guy. Right. So, you know, what does he give them on a more regular basis? Because I think you need a complimentary piece to Carroll, because while he's done a nice job in being the leading guy, it'll be even tougher, as we just said, on Trae Young in league play unless he gets some help around him.
I agree. Well, that will be an interesting one to watch as well. And that is all of the teams in the Big 12. We won't cover the second half of the schedule because we already talked about the first half, the same teams. But man, Brian, I really appreciate you coming on, filling in on a day when Andrew's down there in New Zealand on his honeymoon, the jerk. But we'll excuse that, I suppose. And I know you're going to hit the road heading down to Austin today. I won't keep you any longer. Have a great call tomorrow at Texas game. Bring us a win back if you don't mind. And thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me on. Congratulations to Andrew and his lovely bride. I've not had the privilege of meeting her, but New Zealand for the honeymoon. I don't think I could do that. I'd be too smitten with the sexy accents of the New Zealanders. I'd probably be doing a double take and get an elbow in the rib cage from my new wife. But
yeah, you gotta be careful.
It's a beautiful place. No doubt. That's a beautiful place. And I'm sure they're a great couple. So congratulations to them.
Well, he's missing his priorities because I know he's missing a couple KU games while he's down there. So I told him he needs to honeymoon in Silver Dollar City next time so he can get back for some games. But anyway, we'll let that
Austin
slide.
Austin and Fort Worth are beautiful this time of year.
It's
so.
True, right? It's true. Yeah. Well, thanks. Thanks again, Brian. Have a great call tomorrow. And we'll continue to watch your work. As always, hit Brian up at B Haney on Twitter. If you don't follow him, get out there and do it right now. And really appreciate you coming on. Have a great call tomorrow.
Hey, thanks, Kevin. One of my all-time favorite guys. You and I go way back to our Top City roots. Thanks for supporting me throughout my career and giving me the chance to come on. And I'll be waiting on that watch. So,
it's coming.
Make sure you got my updated address, okay?
It's coming. Yeah, I'll get that updated address. You just wait for it. Yeah, it's coming.
Just make sure it's for my buddy Michael Wilson at Nile there in Kansas City, and we'll really do as many shows as you want.
I bet
thanks,
you
bud.
Would. I bet you would. All right, see you, Brian. Bye-bye. Up in Allen Field, I was making plays. They know we ballin', yo. I gotta get it, yeah, I hustle for it. I put the work in all the time, and I had to suffer for it. They don't wanna see us win. 13, about to buy Big 12 champions, whoa. They don't want to see us win 13 back-to-back Big 12 champions. Whoa. You heard it from Redhead. Thanks, Redhead. And thank you to Brian for coming on to the podcast. What a great dude. Known him for a long, long time. He's been the same guy ever since I met him. It never changed one bit. One of just the stand-up dudes. He's enjoying life as the voice of the Kansas Jayhawks. Brings a ton of energy to that. To his job every day, and we're very lucky and happy to have him. And obviously as a friend of the Jayhawk Talk podcast as well. So thanks again, Brian. Let's talk about a few of the games this week before we get out of here. I just wanted to touch on some of the freaking ridiculous games that we're going to see day in and day out in the Big 12. Just this Friday, we obviously have the KU-Texas game. As we talked about, it's just a two-point projected win for KU on KenPom. But there's some other killer games going on. We've got West Virginia at OSU. Again, KenPom's, I got that as a three-point West Virginia win. We got Baylor at Tech. They've got Tech by 6 in that game. I don't know if it'll be that big of a spread, but we'll see. And then we got K-State at Iowa State. I think I'll take Iowa State in a very close one there, even though KenPom's got it the other way around. So some huge games on Friday to open up the slate. Saturday, another monster. We've got OU going to TCU. KenPom has that as a two-point TCU win. I think I'd take it the other way around, but God, it's close. I think it's going to be an awesome game. Either way, you're seeing a trend here. These games are going to be coin flips every night. Monday, we've got West Virginia going to K-State. You might think, oh, West Virginia's too good for that, but even KenPom's got that as a two-point game in favor of West Virginia. Then you got Texas at Iowa State. Another coin flip, 67-65 is how KenPom's got that one scoring out. On Tuesday, TCU goes to Baylor. I mean, you see a trend here. Just some insane games. TCU at Baylor. KenPom's got that as a three-point Baylor win. I think it's a coin flip. And then, as we mentioned, Tech comes to Kansas. And you might think, Kansas generally gets a 5 to 7 point bump for being at Allen Fieldhouse. Well, just to show you, KenPom's got that as just a 5-point KU win. Personally, I sure hope that the line in Vegas is -5 because I think I'd hammer KU on that. But that's neither here nor there. Wednesday, we got OSU at OU. That should be a nice, comfortable OU win. And then Saturday, another blowout. We got Texas at Baylor, K-State at Tech, Iowa State at Oklahoma State, and then a big one here. OU goes to West Virginia, and then the last, KU at TCU. Just some insane games this week. And you know, you're looking at the next week and the next week and the next week. It's just this over and over and over again. Like, every week there are killer games in the Big 12, and that's because there's just so many dang good teams. It's going to be a ton of fun. Home court advantages are going to mean everything. And the key to this race, I'm telling you, is winning your home games and not losing those ones you're not supposed to lose. And KU somehow finds a way every year to avoid those Wednesday night boring games where, you know, somebody comes into town that shouldn't really be a test and you accidentally lose at home. It seems to happen to everybody else but Kansas. And part of that is obviously Allen Fieldhouse. We bring it every night from the fan perspective. But that is one thing that you got to keep doing. You got to win your home games. And then if you can somehow pull off an upset or two on the road, bring one home that you don't deserve, that is what you do to get another Big 12 title added to the list of 13, making it a record 14th. We are looking forward to this Big 12 slate. Thanks again to Brian for coming on. The next podcast we have, it'll be probably Andrew back. If he's still doing his thing in New Zealand, we feel like we want to get another pod out, we might have another guest on. We will see on that. But either way, thank you for listening. Happy New Year. Go cheer on the Jayhawks in this game on Friday night against Texas. Get to Allen Fieldhouse on Tuesday to see him play Tech. And until next time, rock chalk. I tried to tell them every time we on the court. I tried to tell them that we never coming up short. I tried to tell them that we came here to get the win. I tried to tell them that they should never let us in. They say that we the best, but I say we the greatest. That's why they try to knock us down and always seem to hate us. That's why they talk about us. They know they can never fade us. It's tradition and that Kansas pride that has truly made us. They know just how we feel. They know at Allen Field that we gon' keep it real. Shout out to Bill. This for them fans that waited off in them long lines, camped out before the games, and they stayed a long time. Every dollar that we spend just to watch our team win, on a Jayhawk shirt or a new clean Benz with a sticker on the back with the K and the U. Uh-huh, yeah, baby, that'll make you say, ooh. We at the top of the top, just like we should be. Started from the bottom, thanks to what James could see. Dr. Naismith made a game for man, changed lives for the players, and did the same for the fans. Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby. All them years that we've been cheering, everything that we've been hearing, all them spreads that we've been clearing, never been no team we fearing, and look how Bill got us steering, all them tournaments appearing, with no team that's interfering, nine times get to cheering, with them banners held high, and the crowd going wild, night before the Final Four, you can't even sleep now, yeah, we at the peak now, we can't even leap down, March Madness, man, we've been waiting weeks now. If you a Hawks fan, go ahead and hold them ones high. Shout out to the boosters showing love and the alumni. I'm speaking for the fans, even though I'm just one guy. We appreciate the love, love won't run dry. Imagine the state of Kansas with no Jayhawks. That's like having no streets but trying to jaywalk. They see us as support and we see them on the court. So we keep it loud and do our best so we don't come up short. We win together and we lose together. But win or lose, we still booze together. Struggles in my life will change me as a man. But one thing that'll never change, I'll be a Jayhawk fan. I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck Jayhawk in your faces.